Hey everyone, welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast where every week, myself, Adrian, and Matt talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, I just want to make sure to let you know to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you can find us. It is the easiest way for you to support us. And we want to let you know that we have our 100th episode coming up. So please, please, please send us all of your questions through email, butwhythoughpodcast@gmail.com, or send them to us on Twitter @butwhythoughpc. We want to hear from you, and we want to answer all of the questions you have to ask. And if you want to support us a little bit more, head on over to patreon.com/butwhythoughpc. Enjoy the show. But either the podcast, and today we are dedicating this episode to Lil Sebastian. As always, I'm your host Kate, and here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And we're talking about Parks and Rec today.
Parks and Rec. Treat yourself.
It's so good.
Yo, send it.
No. However, that is something I feel like Tom would have said.
I'm not gonna lie. And if you're confused, check out our Patreon. I've been thinking about Yo Send It all day. Like, literally all day. And I'm not even exaggerating. Like, some kid was like, oh, can I send you this thing for you to print it? I was like, yo, send it. In class today. That's how much this stuff has been in my mind.
So, Matt has been saying it nonstop since we recorded last night. So, I have no choice but to think about it all day. Because I work from home on Fridays.
And this is the kind of quality content you can get on Patreon for the $3 tier.
Anyway, but before we get started, we do have an announcement to make. This is episode 96, and episode 100 is around the corner, and we want to do kind of like an AMA, ask us anything. So if you're listening right now and you have a question for all three of us, one of us, whoever, well, I mean, obviously whoever, as in we're on the podcast, email us at butwhythoughpodcast@gmail.com, or tweet at us at butwhythoughpc on, obviously, Twitter. But you can also hit us up on Instagram and Facebook. They're the exact same things. And just ask us your burning questions or let us know what you really like about the show.
Yeah, we're super excited. Our 50th episode was really fun to do. We had a lot of really great questions. So I'm really excited for 100 because we are definitely not the same podcast, like, in terms of size that we were at 50. So, you know, let us know. Let's talk about it.
And we'll probably turn it into a drinking game. So it's going to be a fun episode.
Probably, yes. I hope we do.
Yes.
Matt, live stream? Maybe.
Ooh, live stream would be good.
Maybe. Who knows?
No.
Old man Matt. Here he
Ed
comes.
Ed Sheeran Matt.
Ed Sheeran Matt.
Yes.
Okay. So now we can get into it. And Adrian's leading the episode. So take it away, Adrian.
Yeah. I mean, I'm leading this episode, but to be perfectly honest, like, we all love Parks and Recreation. Any of us could have done this episode. So expect a lot of, like, really great conversations and favorite moments about the show. The main reason that we're covering it is because Parks and Recreation turns 10 on April 9th, 2019. Not 20, because apparently I tweeted it wrong in the middle of my classes. And I regret nothing. I said what I said. But 10 years. Turns 10 years in April. So that's why we're covering it. It's a great show. And I hope that you, if you haven't watched it, expect, like, some maybe light spoilers, because we'll probably talk about kind of the show in general. But if you do love it, you'll probably get some moments of, like, oh, yes, that was really fun. So
again, the show's also been out for 10 years, so I feel not bad about spoilers.
Yeah, I really don't, because it's also, like, a really, really great show.
So,
like,
well, yeah, because it's also one of those shows that, like, it's funny when you say it, but it's even more it's hilarious when you actually watch the characters doing it.
Yeah, like so, like we'll say some stuff that happens in like season 6 and season 7, but like you probably won't remember, so it'll be okay. It'll be fine. And knowing me, I hate spoilers, but this is a show that's so good that I'll spoil it just so you can go back and rewatch it and enjoy all the hilarity.
Also, start from when Ben and Chris get there.
Yeah, because that's going to be into my intro question.
Can we like start the actual episode?
Okay, well, I was going to say that, Matt. Jesus.
We have like a disclaimer. This is like a freaking terms and like policy clipbox. That's like 87 minutes.
Hey, we're talking about a political show, okay? And Kate gave me a perfect transition where I was going to say, how were you introduced to Parks and Recreation? Because that's directly related to how I was introduced to the show. So, our intro question. How were you introduced to Parks and Recreation? Did you watch it when it was on NBC? Did you watch it when it was streaming? Did someone tell you to watch it from season 2 on? Like, how were you introduced? Matt?
So, I didn't watch it on actual TV. I did watch it up to date because at this time they were still giving, like, pretty shows, like, relatively, like, along the time of, like, you know, it ends in November and we get it, like, in December so you can rewatch it. So, I'm still, like, well, I wasn't, like, completely behind. But I do know I didn't start till like season when it was like season 4 or 5. I think about season 4 when they started. I tried it one time, watched season 1, like part of it, and was like, this is terrible. Why do people like this show? And then quit and didn't watch it again. And then I think like maybe a year or two later, I finally went back and people were like, hey, watch this thing from, you know, like just push through it. And so I finally tried it again. I pushed through it. I think I slept through most of season 1. Season 2, and then obviously, once it got good going, I watched all of it relatively quickly to catch up to where, like I said, by the last season or two, I was pretty much caught up.
Yeah, what about you, Kate?
So, I tried to watch it on my own when it was on Netflix, because I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, I don't know, I need a show. And I think there were like 5 seasons on it? 5 or 6 seasons on it? Five seasons. There were 5 seasons on Netflix. And I was like, nope, this is boring. I can't do this. And I stopped watching it in like episode 4. And then I was talking with my friend about The Office one day after class. And they were like, oh, you should watch Parks and Rec. I was like, I tried. It's boring. Like the humor is just not there. They're like, no. Keep watching it. Just power through it. Keep watching it. It's like a happy Office. Like, it's not nearly as depressing as The Office is in some points. And the characters just get better. And they said, just wait for the accountant to show up. And I was like, okay. And then I watched it. And the moment I saw Ben Wyatt, I fell in love. Because he carries his tension for the new Star Wars sequels in his shoulders. Just like I did.
Yeah. I mean, literally, I think everyone I've ever talked to about Parks and Recreation, and maybe some other listeners are in different boats, but I don't know anybody who watched it when it was like on NBC and watched it, you know, every single night, because everyone I know watched it on streaming services and kind of binge watched it that way. I know for my wife and I, like, we watched season 1, we're like, we don't see the appeal. And then someone told us to give us a second chance in season 2, and then we binge watched all of season 2 within like a couple of days because it was just so good after the fact. So I think we're all in the same boat, and I think that's a normal thing for the show, and we'll kind of talk about like maybe why that happened and how it got better over time. But if you're not familiar, Parks and Recreation is a political satire sitcom created by Greg Daniels and Michael Schur. Michael Schur? Kate,
think
help.
So?
Linguist,
sure.
Help. Okay, Michael Schur, we'll just go with that. And it premiered in 2009 on NBC. That's why it's celebrating its 10-year anniversary this year. And if Greg Daniels and Michael Schreier?
Sure.
Those names might be familiar because these are actually two pretty big names in the cable television and like network television markets, because Greg Daniel is well known for his credits on SNL as a writer. He's also written on The Simpsons. He's the co-creator of King of the Hill, and he's also the mind behind the American adaptation of The Office. That's for Greg Daniels. And Michael Schur is someone who has also worked on The Office writing, has also written for SNL, and has also created hit shows like The Good Place, as well as co-creating co-creating Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So all of those shows are good shows. So
are
if
they?
You don't know...
He's saying that because he doesn't like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
You don't like Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
They are. No, I do not.
They're good.
Nine-Nine.
This isn't like Andy. This is back to the Andy Samberg hate, so he's never gonna like it.
Hey man, the show's going way past Andy Samberg. Like, like if you can get past your Andy Samberg hate, you should go watch the show.
So good.
But The Good Place, awesome. SNL, obviously great. You love King of the Hill. So if you like those two, like if you like any of the shows we just mentioned, Brooklyn, Parks and Recreation should be a show that should relatively interest you, because though two creators have, you know, credits with some of the biggest shows on TV. And the series ran fully on NBC, which is kind of a surprise now because I can't think of many shows that stay on the same network nowadays. It ran from April 2009 to February of 2015 with 7 seasons and 125 episodes.
So is it only 7 seasons? I thought it was 8
seasons.
Yeah,
7.
Yeah, it's only 7 seasons.
Okay.
The Office is 8.
No, The Office is 6.
He doesn't count the last two.
Yeah.
The show ends beautifully. They set The Office on fire. They get engaged. They're going to Colorado. That's the end of the show. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because I don't count the first season for Parks and Recreation. Like, I only count like the 6 seasons until Rob Lowe and Adam Scott get there. So it's okay. It's the same. So the series follows employees of a parks department in a fictional small town called Pawnee, Indiana, with its main focus on the optimistic bureaucrat Leslie Knope, played by Amy Poehler, who also serves as one of the producers for the show. She also has some writing credits on a few episodes as well, so she has a big part in the show overarching. The show was shot in a single-camera documentary film style, similar to that of The Office, which is really no surprise considering that both of the creators had hands in The Office, with Greg Daniels being like the person who headed the American adaptation. The show is actually supposed to be a spinoff of The Office at the request of NBC chairman Ben Silverman, but the two creators, Michael and Greg, decided not to do that and focus on the small town government and the optimistic bureaucrat that Amy Poehler, the small town Democrat of Leslie Knope, after the fact that Amy Poehler was brought on, because they couldn't figure out how to fit the world in The Office's world into the spinoff idea. And they went through, like, when I was doing the research for this episode, like, they went through a bunch of different ideas. My favorite one was how to connect The Office to Parks and Recreation, was that they were going to have a broken copy machine from Scranton. They should put an A. That's their fault, not mine. A copy machine from Scranton would break down. I said Scranton. I said that.
No, now you said it. That was good. You said the right one that time.
Oh, sorry. Is, you know, Michael going to come find me? Whatever. He left. It's his fault. A copy machine from Scranton would break down in an episode of The Office and then end up in Pawnee, making the office equipment the spun-off character in the show. Thankfully, they didn't go with that. And they just decided to, like, do their own thing and make Amy Poehler the star, because they knew, you know, how great she was, and kind of just focus there and be its own thing.
So going to say, if they did do a spinoff thing, the only because I wouldn't mind if they would have done something the way Eureka and I believe Warehouse 13 did, where they technically, I believe, exist within the same, but you actually don't know, but there's very few episodes. I think they're all like each had like 6 seasons apiece, and I think there's like maybe 2 or 3 crossover things, and they make like maybe make a phone call or something, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with them just making it completely separate.
Oh, no, it didn't bother me they make it completely separate, but seeing this idea, I was like, oh, there could have been a few ways, only because I have seen it where they made 2 completely different shows where they do not overlap except for, like, less than 1%.
Yeah, they had a few different ways to start the show, but they just decided once the from listening to, like, and reading the articles with the creators, once Amy Poehler got there, they're like, no, we're just going to make it based on her because of how great she is. And I think it works out pretty well. The idea was partly inspired by the local politics on the HBO drama The Wire, as well as renewed interest and optimism about politics stemming from the 2008 United States presidential election.
That is such a weird thing to think that that Parks and Rec is like connected to is the local politics of The Wire.
Hey, man.
Renewed interest and optimism.
Well, no, that was very true.
Yeah, I mean, it's very
true. No, I mean, like, compared to, like, where we've gone from, like, we made a TV show.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't even know how this show would have run in our current political, like, environment. I don't think it'd be nearly as funny.
It would have been the opposite. It would have been, like, extremely dark humor and, like, showing how bad things are.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, like, extremely bright humor and showing how bad things can be.
But that would also mean that, like, probably AOC would probably be a guest star a whole bunch, which I'm kind of also down with. So, I don't know. I'm just kidding. I don't want it. Because, like, they said it in our world, so things like the recession and, like, the government shutdown and all that stuff takes place in the show. So, I think this show really comes at, like, the perfect time for, like, this... you know, political satire of kind of like optimism and stuff like that with the 2008 election. So I think it just fit in directly the right place because I don't think that this would work at any other time in, you know, our political history, basically. The coolest thing about Greg and Michael is that they spent time researching local politics. You know, they attended Los Angeles City Council meetings in California. They spoke to actual city planners and elected officials to get a gist of like what they were going to base stories and characters around. And this is something similar to like what Greg Daniels did in King of the Hill and The Office. Like in King of the Hill, like he literally sent his writers down with like notebooks to like figure out, like to go to small towns in Texas and see what it was actually like. And same thing in The Office, like going to different office buildings and kind of getting the gist of, you know, how office life was actually like, which makes for a pretty good show. What do you think about, like, the things that happen in Parks Recreation? So they did their research before going into this realm. Like we kind of said at the beginning, the reception of the first season is not great. Like, literally not at all. And the basis of, like, this criticism is that, like, the deep connection to The Office, like, really hurts the series in a lot of people's opinions. The season was... that and the fact that the season was scheduled as a mid-season replacement, so it was rushed into production to meet the premiere date, which didn't help it either, since many people were unhappy with like the pacing and the lack of character development, and basically how Leslie Knope, Amy Poehler's character, was portrayed. And a lot of it was just rushed, and it just wasn't funny enough, and it just resembled The Office too much. It was like it got nicknamed like the non-funny part of like the non-funny step cousin of like The Office, essentially in that first season. But with changes to the character and the flow of the show, ratings, like, greatly improved, and so did the accolades, basically, from season 1 through 7. So,
yeah. Like, Leslie Knope is not the same character that she was then that she is now. Like, I think, like, the reason I hated it in that season, I couldn't get behind Leslie Knope, was because she was just, like, stalker-obsessed with...
Yeah, a lot of the things was like she was just like ditzy and just unqualified and just making really dumb decisions, and people didn't think that was like a great representation of women, and then just made it seem like she, like you said, was just like a stalker of Mark, who like left after season 2 anyway. So it just wasn't a good...
Mark sucked.
Yeah, he was terrible.
But she was also creepy.
Mark was Mark had moments, but Mark overall, he need to go.
Yeah,
it's like I liked Mark
on my cast list.
Yeah, I was like, I liked Mark a little bit, but then it was like overall, I was like, all I remember from season 1 is the whole. Like, I hated season 1 so much.
Yeah, season 1 is really, really bad. If you're listening to this, if you never watched an episode, just go to season 2. Or watch the last episode of season 1 and then go to season 2.
Well, I don't even know if you could probably skip the first part of season 2 as well, to be honest.
But then you don't get all the really good. Yeah, I mean, second part of season 2 is definitely better, for sure.
You could probably skip the first 30 episodes or something like that.
And, like, and there's obviously, like, this kind of notion of, like, oh, well, if I have to skip the first season, it's not a good show. Bullshit. Like, it's good after the first season. Like, astronomically better.
It's 125 episodes. That means, like, what? The first season's, like, what, 13 episodes? It's a small first season.
No,
right?
It's, like, six. It's, like, six yeah. episodes.
So there's, like, yeah. over 100 good episodes to go watch.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought it was 13.
I think it's 6. Like, when I was doing the research, I'm pretty sure it's 6.
Okay, I don't remember.
Like, almost
I do know it almost got canceled, I believe, after season 2. Was that correct?
After season 2, yeah. It almost did. So, when we're talking about, like, bad and, like, going from like really, really bad to really, really good. We can see that just from like the ratings alone. So season one on Metacritic from the Metascore is a 58, and then Rotten Tomatoes critic score is a 67%. Season two for the Metascore is a 71, and then Rotten Tomatoes is an 88. And then season three for the Metacritic score for the Metascore is 83, and Rotten Tomatoes is 100%. For whatever reason, I don't know how Metascores work. Maybe Kate can inform me better. But like, there's no Metascore for season 4, 5, 6, and 7 because there's only like one or two reviews. But the user score with like hundreds of different ratings for season 4, Metacritic is at an 8.7, and Rotten Tomatoes is at 95%. Season 5, 8.9 on Metacritic and 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. Season 7, 8.5 on Metacritic and 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And season 7, which is arguably probably like one of the weaker seasons comparatively to the other ones, is an 8.3 on Metacritic, but still 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I personally don't really care for a lot of season 7.
Yeah, season 7's kind of, yeah.
It's I don't like what they actually did with the show, personally. It still has its moments. It kind of gets confusing the first 4 episodes. And then, yeah. I mean, I guess it ends nicely because they do wrap it up. But, like, overall, it's like I could gladly skip season 7.
Well, season 7 also just, it suffers from the fact that the stars of the show have gotten big at this point.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so, like, they don't have, like, you don't get as much time with different characters as you should or that you want to get. So it feels a little bit rushed, but it's also, like, Chris Pratt became Star-Lord.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, I mean, like, the whole season completely is weird. I don't even know if they were, I think they were debating whether they were going to have this season. I think it's actually a relatively short season, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but like you said, I think they do wrap it up nicely with, like, the 3 time jumps that it has. I think it wraps it up nicely, and I think it's a good way to do it.
It has a great ending.
Yeah, no, the ending's good. It's just, like, the besides, like, maybe the last 2 episodes, I'm like, I could care less to ever watch this again.
Yeah. So when it comes to awards, like as we always talk about, it doesn't have nearly as many awards as I thought it did. But I think a lot of this comes from a lot of people getting into it after its kind of streaming run. But it has 13 nominations out. Or it has 13 wins out of 75 nominations. And the wins come from Golden Globes, Gracies, NAACP Image Awards, Peabody Awards, GLAAD Awards, Critic Choice, American Comedy, and an AFI. Actually didn't win any Emmys. Nominated a bunch of times, but didn't win any Emmys.
So it is a comedy show, so I don't know if that actually affects it at all.
Well, comedy has its own category at the Emmys.
Does it? Okay. I know that, but I mean, yeah. Does it have a lot compared to, like, other shows? Because I know we do a lot of other stuff like Futurama, but that is animation, even Archer's animation.
I just want to know, like, what won out against it. Like, I'm trying to remember what show.
Yeah.
The Office still goes on until 2012. Correct.
Ah.
So that's first 3 seasons, and then from 2012, I don't know, I didn't even have cable from the last, like, 3.
Yeah, like, I haven't watched shows like this, you know, back. I never really watched shows like this, like, back-to-back, like, on a weekly basis. I kind of just switched this up because on Hulu.
So it was contending with The Big Bang Theory.
Ooh, that was Prime Big Bang.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, Big Bang with Prime during that time.
Yeah, and it's, I think, like, the Sheldon's actor has won, like, almost every time they've been nominated. So, Modern Family, which won that year. Modern Family, The Big Bang Theory, Glee, The Office, and 30 Rock.
Oh, 30 Rock was still going on? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 30 Rock was still.
That might be one of, like, the big reasons, too, like, while this doesn't get a following until after the streaming awards, because everything you just mentioned are, like, prime shows, for sure. And I know that a lot of their nominations come from, like, Amy Poehler's character specifically. Yeah. So a lot of the wins come from that as well, like her being like outstanding actress and things like that. So yeah, it's a rough position. But like we said, like, it does get kind of a, I wouldn't say a cult following, but it definitely gives a big following once people are able to kind of binge pass and kind of get all caught up all at once.
I actually would call it a cult following for, like, one reason, in that people are really expressive. And what I mean by that is, like, there were Galentine's Day events happening at, like, Alamo Drafthouse. And, like, they'll take certain episodes and they'll play them at movie theaters. And, like, it's, like, usually that stuff that only happens when the stuff is happening. But, like, I would say it's because of all that, if that makes sense.
I would say that makes sense. But also, like, literally, since it's part of a show of, like, how Amy... or basically Leslie Knope like celebrates every the random day thing, and now that's apparently become a thing. Like every other day is like international like cheese day and hot dog day and then waffle day, and like playing onto those probably helps a little bit. Those are...
I mean, from a marketing standpoint, yes. But what I mean is, like, anytime I see something, like, there are a whole bunch of parks and rec events that happen all the time.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. Those, Kate, because I would love for you to talk about those, because I'm not completely versed in those. So I was kind of hoping that you could talk about those specifically for Galentine's Day when we talk about representation, because I would love for you to kind of speak on that as, like, from the female perspective. As we kind of get into our But Why Those, that's really it with the production history. Like, it's a pretty quick production history. But why those are kind of like my, you know, what I want to talk about the most. So this show really boils down to, you know, after season one, of course, like the cast, its ability to employ really the cast ability to be funny, but also have really great character development, have really great relationships between their characters. And then obviously like representation are like kind of my big But Why Those that I want to talk about today. So when we talk about the cast, like this cast is like when we say like ensemble, like this cast is ensemble. Like there are so many actors who have taken part in this show, and because the show like developed from season one and kind of on adding people on, it kind of makes it hard to boil down to the main cast. But there are future household names who got their start here, and it's just crazy to think like, oh yeah, that person actually got big after Parks and Recreation. And they're just doing so many more things now. So like, I know like when I see actors in different roles, I mean, when I see Star-Lord, I still think of Andy Dwyer a lot of the times. Even in Jurassic Park, I still think of Andy Dwyer for Chris Pratt. But like the characters are just developed so good, and the writers give them such a great platform to be funny without like trying super hard, that it just works out really, really well. So, and the best part about it, like when you're looking at the researching for like how they did the auditions for this, they really just kind of like picked actors based off their audition and kind of like let them develop as the actual person and actor would let the character develop. So there's a lot of improvisation and ability to kind of like let the actors do their own thing, and like casting specific people because they know that they'd be good at the roles and things like that. So the way that I boiled down the cast, I left Mark out. I'm just getting that out there. We're not going to talk about Mark because Mark was trash. But we have Amy Poehler as Leslie Knope, Rashida Jones as Ann Perkins, Aziz Ansari as Tom Haverford, Nick Offerman as Ron Swanson, Audrey Plaza as April Ludgate, Chris Pratt
is
Aubrey. Yeah, I always read it wrong. Always. I'm slightly dyslexic when it comes to her name.
Just her name.
Ben. Yeah. Aubrey Plaza as April Ludgate, Chris Pratt as Andy Dwyer, Adam Scott as Ben Wyatt, Rob Lowe as Chris Traeger, Jim O'Hare as
Jerry. You have to say that one, though. You have to say Chris Traeger.
I like when he says, Ann Perkins. Jim O'Hare as Jerry, Larry, Gary, Gergich, and Rita as Donna. Rita. Huh? Rita? Is it Rita?
Rita.
As Donna Meagle, a.k.a. cousin of Genuine.
Oh, God, that was so good.
And there's, like, a big, like, as the seasons go, there's, like, lots of recurring cast members. And there's a ton, like, a bunch. But these are some of just my personal favorites. And if you want to say some of yours, you're more than welcome to. But Paula Reed as Leslie's mom, Ben Schwartz as John Raffio, Jenny Slate as Mona Lisa, Mo Collins as Joan Colomezzo, Megan Mullally, who is one of Tammy's...
You mean Megan Mullally? Is it Mullally?
Mullally?
Is that her last name?
I think it's Megan Mullally.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I feel like I just had a revelation of my life right now. That's the only reason I said that. Mullally?
Yeah,
it's Mullally.
Oh. Why did I spell it like that? Maybe because autocorrect didn't correct it for me.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. Yeah,
I'm looking at it. She plays one of the Tammys in the show. They're like a bunch of Tammys, but essentially that's one of Nick Offerman's in the show's ex-wives, but he's actually Nick Offerman's actual wife in real life. John Glacier as Jeremy Jam, who is hilarious.
God. And
Paul Rudd as Bobby Newport. And because this show is set kind of in our time, and like politically driven, and in Indiana they gives a lot of room for actual people to come play themselves in the show. So there are a bunch of references to like Joe Biden, Michelle Obama, Mandan Albright, Roy Hibbert, Andrew Luck, Genuine, as I mentioned earlier, which are set for like really, really great moments. But one of my favorite things is that the show is so big that it brings in just people to come in and do, you know, a couple of episodes. So even though they weren't in the show for a long time, they present just like really, really great moments. So people like Sam Elliott, Patton Oswalt, J.K. Simmons, John Hamm, Andy Samberg, Will Forte, Chelsea Peretti, Kristen Bell, William Arnett, Bill Murray, John Cena. And like the list just goes on and on of all these people who in the later seasons were able to come into the show and present, you know, maybe one or two episodes and just be like really, really quality because of how popular the show was, even though it wasn't as popular as maybe like an Office or 30 Rock.
I completely forgot that John Cena was.
He had an episode. Come on, man. You know I had to include John
Cena. The only
Cena.
Person I'm disappointed you left off was Henry Winkle.
Yep, Henry Winkler.
Winkler, yeah. It's the only other person.
Like I said, because if I and look at this cast list, there is a lot of people, okay?
If we have to talk about John Raffio, then you can at least get his dad.
Hey.
Well, because that's my favorite thing, because I just love it. I have never done anything wrong in my life, ever. I know this, and I love you. I use that all the time.
Yeah, but let's just say, like, there's people I left off of this list that you may have, like, deep connections to. But that's just because there's just so many people who are on this show. Like, I can't think of another show that has this many people just show up randomly.
I wish you would have mentioned the Perdverts.
I was going to mention Perd, but I didn't know. I don't know. He's kind of hit and miss for me sometimes.
Well, so the reason I mentioned that is because I have seen him as a news announcer on the background in TV shows in like two other ones. I'm not even joking.
I'm not aware of that, but
yeah, the Herd with Perd. I don't even know who he is in real life.
I don't know who he is in real life either. That's why I did put him on there. Yeah, but the cast list is huge, right? And I think like a lot of this comes from just like the general success of this show. Like, I don't think you can get people like Sam Elliott and, you know, Bill Murray and John Cena and XYZ person to come on your show if it isn't a quality show where people respect their thing. For those of you who aren't able to see what we're recording, Kate is losing her mind and wants to say, add something in.
There is actually an NPR audio, like thing. The name of the episode is I'm Perd Happily, and I just realized I'm played by an actual newscaster. That's why we don't know who he is, because he's an actual newscaster.
Oh, what?
Yes!
How did he swing that? How did he do all those episodes being an actual newscaster?
His name is Jay Jackson. And he was a real reporter at KCAL9 News in Los Angeles.
Well, color me surprised.
Yeah, that's why I did the big hand gesture. I was like, holy shit! Okay.
But just like in general, like all of these names are, whether they're like big names now or they're big names then, like this cast list has heavy hitters when it comes to, you know, whether it's a comedy department, the writing department, or the producer department. And they just really, really work well off of each other. And like while the show was scripted, I think some of the best moments from the show come from the showrunner's ability to just let the actors just let loose and kind of improvise some of their scenes. Or like just small little jokes that are made in the writing room were so funny that they let like the characters kind of just play off of them and then just make them into bigger jokes later in the show. So just a few of like the best moments that I can think of that were like either improvised or became bigger moments because of how big of a hit they were when the actors produced them was things like "Treat Yourself," which is one of my favorite moments of the show that was supposed to be just like a one-off joke, but they just continued it on for seasons and seasons. One of the best lines and one of like ones that is that Michael Schur specifically has said is like one of the best improvised lines in the show. It is when Andy, Chris Pratt's character, is diagnosing Leslie with the flu, and he's like, oh, I googled it, and I googled your symptoms, and like all that stuff. Like, that was like a complete improvised line. Andy actually taking off his like his color shorts, like his skin shorts, to show up naked in season 2. Like, he just did that. That was the thing he just did because he wanted the actual reaction. he improvised all of like Mouse Rat's alternative names. So basically anything with Chris Pratt, just think that it's probably improvised because it probably is. Jerry, Gary, Larry Gergich being clumsy and bad at his job was something that just happened in one scene, and they just kind of played off of it because it worked so well. Patton's filibuster was like the last scene shot in like the filibuster, and they're like, hey, just go crazy and talk for as long as you can. And I really, really hope that we link this filibuster in the show notes because it's one of the best moments in the entire show.
I will, because I use that shit for everything and I love it. And it is my favorite thing that exists because there's actually like a 15-minute clip of it.
Yes, it's so good.
You only see a small piece in it. But like it's all about bridging the MCU and Star Wars. And it's so good. Like before Infinity War came out, I think I shared that like four different times.
Yeah, I mean, they just let them go with it. And a lot of like the Fun Run stuff does make it into it. So like for Fun Run, it's basically like after they shoot all the scripted scenes, they say, hey, go nuts on this scene and we'll see if we use it. And things like Patton Oswalt's filibuster where he's just, you know, plays a, you know, overzealous, you know, member of the community, and he basically filibusters this whole just amazing process of like that came out of his brain. Like he like legitimately thought of this stuff and it just, and it works. Yeah. And it just works, which is like the best part about it. Like you watch that whole 15-minute thing, you're like, okay, I can see that. Chewbacca coming back as like a robot. I'm kind of down with this. Like this works.
So I want to know how. So there are a lot of parts in the show where people just list things, and I want to know how much of that is like just them making up with it. Because there's that scene where it's when Leslie's trying to turn the hole or the hole into a community garden, and Tom just keeps using like rap and hip hop group names for like the names of the plants. He's like Bones and Thug Harmoniums and Ludacris's, and like he just lists a whole bunch. And then I know that like Leslie also does it with the ovaries before broveries, and like she lists like different things. And so I want to know how much of that is like actually
I'm not 100% sure of how much that is improvised, but I do know that there are moments like where like the cast will like say, hey, I would like to say this then, like in kind of like the writing room. Like, for example, like Jean Ralphio's rap, like in the club when he's like rapping like Leslie's name and he raps like this person's name and this person's name and he like messes up the end rhymes. That was Amy Poehler. Amy Poehler wrote those raps. So like,
that's really cool.
Even though they're not, you know, the writers of the show, they know that these people are funny enough, have the credentials from like SNL and Mad TV to write funny jokes. So even if they're not improvised, they do let them kind of like, hey, what would you like to do at this point? So maybe some of those are related to that too, but I'm not 100% sure.
And I also don't see it in your notes really. And if I miss it, I apologize. But like the physical comedy in this show is so good too. Like I just looked up a picture of Larry, Jerry, Gary Gergich, and it's the one where he falls into the creek with the burrito. Yeah. And it's just a still. It's just a still of him falling to get his burrito. And like, it like there's nothing in there. There's no talking. It's not a GIF. It's not a video. It is just a still of that scene. And my automatic reaction in my body is to laugh because I know what happened. And then like there's all of the physical comedy with Andy. Like Andy running for the first time is like the best thing ever.
Yeah, like I didn't even really think it, because I mean like, I think because they just do comedy so well that like they don't just hit you like, here's physical comedy and slapstick humor. Like, they just sprinkle it in that it works so well. Like, I think of, like, when Nick Offerman is running to, like, inform Leslie towards, like, the end of season about, like, a new development. And he just, like, busts his ass as he's running. Dude, Nick Offerman is falling is actually hilarious. I don't know if that was meant to be hilarious, but that is actually hilarious to see Ron Swanson bust his ass running in a park.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. Like, it's one of those things is like physically, and I think it also is just like a credit to Greg Daniel and like having people who know how to do it too, because like I think physical comedy is something really hard to do and something that can get overdone. But like I would say like my biggest tie between The Office and this is just the excellent use of like physical humor without making it feel like, oh, these are the Three Stooges. It's more like, oh, this person is totally doing this average mundane task, and this is hilarious because it probably would really happen.
Yeah, and I think that's my biggest point for this about why, though, is that they cast people who know... They cast people and, like, the showrunners know how to do comedy right, and that's just because, like, they've just been parts of some of the biggest shows in comedy. So it just works really, really well where they're not just hitting you over the head with just, here's a joke, it's here it comes, boom, joke. Yeah.
I was going to say, I also just want to say that my favorite guest is actually Jon Hamm. I love him so much.
I was going to, yeah, I mean, that works. Matt, do you have any favorite guests outside of the ones that you corrected me with? And I'm sorry I didn't add him on there.
No, honestly, not really. The guests, I don't know, I don't mind. Besides Patton Oswalt, I mean, I remember the other ones, but Patton Oswalt obviously stands out, as we've mentioned. I think it helps that out of this main core, like, I think at least three of these are stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sound comedians, or like they had, you know, they were on Mad TV or SNL at some point.
Correct.
Like they're actual funny people.
Yeah. So I think it's a little different why I think it works very well. I think obviously what Kate said with the, I guess, the physical type comedy of like mundane, like weird things and like people just falling down, because you can definitely get to the like, oh, this is stupid and like, why is this funny, versus like, this was hilarious because he dropped a burrito. Andy, I do like I think Andy does well, because I know in the first season he's like awful. I didn't actually really like Chris Pratt's character. And then it didn't.
Yeah, I mean, at the start, he was only, from what I was reading, he was only supposed to be in the show for like 6 episodes.
Yeah, I think people really, I think people were actually really liked him, even though he was pretty obnoxious the first one. But I think he does come around to where his comedy, because as dumb as they play his character, he eventually like has some competency, which I guess was fine. Because that's what I think why we get a lot of these too, because as, you know, as funny and comedy we have, it's not like they're completely stupid.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of that comes from, like, the cast not just being just funny, but, like, the writing and their acting leads to, like, really great character moments, because people not only are funny, but they can act well. And I think it makes you appreciate the people. I think it does, like, a lot of things. I think it makes you appreciate the people around you more, like, as an actual person, seeing people who are actually around you. And it might even make you want to do more to aspire with your life, because no one at the start of this show is the same person at the end, like Kate mentioned at the very beginning, whether that's from like directing of like the writing to make it better, or just like letting the characters kind of develop their own character in a certain type of way.
I guess the main thing I look at is like, I can't stand Mona Lisa or John Raphael. I can't stand those characters and how many people like them. I cannot stand them whatsoever.
They're the worst.
Between the over the top and just complete, like, this can't be real life. Like, you can't have somebody actually say something or do something that's stupid, versus like we have some of like what Andy does in the show, which is dumb, but at least he seems some competent by the end.
No, I don't even think it's that he seems competent. I just think that it's so dumb, but it's not outlandish.
That
dumb.
Could be fair too, because like I know the other ones are so over the top that I just cannot stand them.
Andy is simple, and I think that Andy is very over the top, but the thing is like the network, like I just Googled it. It says you have network connectivity problems. Like, it just works, because I think there's something that I really love about workplace comedies, like, or even just like overall, like, I don't know, like, this genre of comedy that happened, 30 Rock, The Office, Parks and Rec. Like, what I love about it is that they're taking mundane things and making them funny. And I could totally see somebody saying that, whether sarcastically or in real life. And I think the reason Andy is so funny is because his character commits to those things and he genuinely believes it. Whereas John Ralphio, I actually like John Ralphio, but only because I like his hair, is like, he's extremely outlandish, but I don't think Ben Schwartz like actually plays him to, there's not a seriousness to it almost. Like, Andy will look you like dead straight in the eyes until you have network connectivity problems.
Yeah, or go to like the doctor and say, I wipe.
Yeah.
And still poop. But I feel like that. I feel like this conversation somebody has fucking had at the doctor's office, though, which makes it, like, that much more relatable, like you said.
Yeah. I also want to point out one of my favorite moments ever, like, one of my favorite moments is actually it's the one where Ben loses his job. And he makes the claymation video, and he holds up the claymation. He's like, would a depressed person do this?
And he's like, oh my god, what is wrong with me? Yeah. Or any episode with this cone thing. Oh, so good.
Cones of Dunshire.
Cones of Dunshire.
Like, I we're talking representation where representation happens, but I actually feel the I identify the most with Ben. Like, I don't care about Amy or Anne, like, or Leslie or Anne. I love them, but I identify with Ben because we both carry our stress on our shoulders about nerdy shit.
Yeah, so we kind of talked about how, like, these characters aren't really the same as where they are at the end. With, like, when I say that, I mean, like, main cast, right? Like, Jean Ralphio is still Jean Ralphio. Mona Lisa is still Mona Lisa because they're kind of like the side character things. But when we talk about our main cast, they definitely have some kind of development, even if it's like drastic development or just like slight development. And I think that like makes those character moments better. And just really nails the show's ability to do like things like character development and show actual genuine relationships. And then like we were talking about at the very end, kind of just representation and kind of realistic representation of different things, whether it be like a workplace drama, whether it be like female friendship representation, et cetera, et cetera. So for this next piece, for the But Why Those, we'll talk about some kind of like how these characters developed and kind of like what we liked and what we didn't like. And there's obviously going to be some spoilers here, so I'll talk about what they were in season one compared to what they are in season six, season seven, and so on. Obviously spoilers, but go watch the show.
Adrian, the show ended in 2015. If you haven't watched it by now, then you're on your own.
But it's only 4 years ago, and I feel bad.
It's 4 years ago.
You're right. So we have Leslie Knope, who is probably our main... I would say definitely our main character. She goes from a park department bureaucrat who fails a lot trying to get things done to the governor of Indiana and maybe the president of the country by 2048. I don't know. They kind of leave that kind of vague. Tom Haverford, Aziz Ansari's character, basically a super lazy and like doesn't care about doing work, lazy parks worker, to a successful businessman, to an unsuccessful businessman when his business basically goes under when he tries to expand, to basically a writer about his his failures and kind of like a kind of do better kind of book in the very last season. April Ludgate, played by Aubrey Plaza. Who basically, like, the character was, like, written for. Like, they cast Aubrey Plaza to... Or Aubrey Ludgate. Wow. Aubrey Plaza to be April Ludgate. See, I got them confused because, like, they cast her to basically play herself in a lot of ways.
Aubrey Plaza's Twitter handle is old hag.
Yeah, so. Like, they basically played her... They basically cast her to play herself. And it just works really well because she plays an uninterested teenager to basically working for the American Service Foundation. So, basically caring about... Not caring about anything to... actually doing quality service work. There's that episode right where she does all the stuff for the dogs and how she one of my favorite gifts of the entire series is when she was like, I like dogs more than people, and like we should care about more dogs than people or whatever like the gif is. Yeah. And I think it's great. Andy Dwyer, like we talked about, like literally goes from a homeless goof who lives in a hole behind his ex-girlfriend's house.
So, like, I'm sorry, I'm trying to keep myself on mute, but, like, this is what happens. Like, you mention things, and it just automatically plays in my head.
Yeah.
Because I remember when he was trying to win Anne back, and he was going, I have a job interview, and he just, like, jumps
and then he runs into the hole. Yeah, like, he literally does that to being a literal public access TV star as Johnny Karate. Like, he just goes from, like, nothing to something.
A children's entertainer, sir.
Hey, he was on public access, I'm sorry, and he was a TV star, Johnny Karate, and he gave it all up to let April live out her dreams, which I'll get to later. But, and then we have Ben Wyatt, who basically kind of, we get introduced to Ben as like kind of a tight ass, who is basically a tight ass because of his political failures, like when he was younger, to, you know, a literally a representative, in the House of Representatives for Indiana, and maybe president, I don't know, they really don't tell us at the end of the show. But he goes from, you know, basically creating a political scandal in his town and just being a tight-ass accountant to actually being a quality, you know, politician and person who wants to do better. Ron Swanson, played by Nick Offerman, probably one of the best characters on the show, goes from a government hater to still kind of a government hater, but happy as superintendent of the Pawnee National Park at the end of the show, where you have that scene of him kind of in the boat. You know, drawing down the thing.
I also think like the biggest thing with his character is too is that like he doesn't care about anyone in the beginning, and like actively tries to not care about anybody throughout the entire show, and then is like the dad to everybody.
Yeah,
and
like, for sure.
Ends up becoming a dad, which is amazing.
Yeah,
Oh yeah, Lucy Lawless is a guest too, and I love her.
Yeah, there's a lot, dude. There's so many. There is a literal Wikipedia page of all of the guest stars, and it is a huge list of people. But like I said, like the development is like probably the biggest piece of the show. I think it's why the first season struggled so much, is because they didn't really show that these characters were growing. They kind of just stayed the same kind of characters. But into season 2, season 3, season 4, we see them go from kind of just like local Pawnee nobodies to like actual people, and then growing from actual real world experiences through their relationships, which is kind of like my next but why though. But before we get into that, any thoughts on like the character development piece of Parks and Recreation?
Why is Chris Traeger not on here?
Because Chris Traeger is just awesome. And, like, I don't think he has as big of a jump. He does have a jump, right? But he doesn't have, like, a big of a jump as, like, Andy Dwyer. Yeah. Like, he's still Chris Traeger. He just moved to a different state and had a family.
He seemed to be more accommodating. He actually realized he could die.
Okay. His biggest character moment was him realizing he could die. Because, like, he's not really accommodating, and he still doesn't know how to tell people bad news. Poor Anne thought she was still with him for, like, months after he broke up with her. Like, yeah, Chris Traeger was still Chris Traeger at the end. But I also don't think he's, like, core cast too much.
Yeah, because he is just a big actor in general, so that's why he has such a sporadic spot in the show.
And like Anne isn't even like a core character.
Yeah, I mean they leave in season 6, like they're gone in season 7, and then they come back for a little bit in season 7.
So like when I think of core characters, I think of these guys.
That's fair. I know season 7 Ron gets hosed of season 7 for what happens to his character. Obviously Chris Pratt doing Star Wars, so his season 7, now I think about it, is just not that good.
Yeah, it's not good to like the last couple episodes, in my opinion, because whatever I think of season 7, all I think of is like about how it all wrapped up and how we all like how we all got like closure on all of our characters. But as
it was rough to make season, it through.
Yeah, I don't think it's as good.
The first four episodes are really, really confusing. Like you have no idea what's going on. They do that massive time jump for whatever reason.
And I mean, I guess I'll say it now, but like one of my fun facts. Is that the time jump happens because Amy Poehler didn't want to deal with babies on the show because she had just finished dealing with babies in real life. So that's the entire reason why our time jump happens from season 6 to season 7.
Yeah. I love that so much.
She was like, nah, I don't want to deal with babies. I did that in real life. I don't want to do it. So that's why the time jump happens. Oh. Fun fact.
They're still bad.
Which is understandable, though.
I mean, it's understandable. It's understandable from like an actress standpoint and everything else, but it's still, the season's still pretty bad because of it.
Yeah, no. Like, the season's still pretty bad, but I don't think it's bad because of the time jump. Like, I actually think, like, them doing this with babies would have kind of made it bad.
Oh, no, it probably would have been horrible with babies.
Yeah, you lose the autonomy of the characters if you put them with, like, babies.
I mean, there's a reason I quit watching Bones after when she got pregnant and they had the baby and it became weird. But, like, I just know with the time jump, like I said, it takes about almost 4 episodes to even figure anything out. And then obviously because I think they didn't they wait on season 7? Wasn't it like a weird delay because of the baby issue? Yeah, which I think also threw everything off because of all the characters. Because like I said,
Yeah, because I know that was like always a big question of like why the time jump, but that's from what I saw, that's the reason. Amy Poehler didn't want to deal with babies, so she's like, nah, let's just time jump it. And just go from there with triplets for some reason. I don't know. So like Kate mentioned earlier with like Ron Swanson kind of becoming like the dad of the show. I think that it just really shows not only like the development of character, but like the development of relationships and how they just really show quality, like wholesome relationships. Like Alex, who's been a guest star of our show multiple times, I think would agree that the show has really wholesome moments in and out of it throughout the whole thing. And I'm just going to go through a couple pairings of people who have like really great relationships and kind of just talk about the relationships kind of overarching. But when I think of relationships in the show, I think of people like Leslie and Ron, of course, right? Like I can't think of a better mentor-mentee relationship or like a relationship where like the learner becomes like the master, because like Leslie kind of outpaces Ron in terms of like things, and Ron basically asks Leslie for a job at the end. Like, I can't think of a better mentor-mentee relationship in a TV show really ever. Andy and April, who are basically like an irresponsible couple who like are literally eating out of cereal out of dog bowls and like frisbees, when they kind of get their own place, to actual productive adults who support each other through every big moment in their life. Like, I honestly can't think of a better. They're honestly my favorite relationship in the show, but mainly because April reminds me so much of Stefani, like so much that she quoted April Ludgate's wedding vows in My Wedding Vows at my own wedding, about how she usually hates things, but she hates things a little less, like when I'm with her kind of thing. And I just see April and Stefani from like the brown part to the hating things but loving me kind of thing. So their relationship goes from basically a couple who didn't really do anything, and like they ate cereal out of a frisbee. I don't know if y'all remember that scene, but they literally ate cereal out of a frisbee. Oh
no, I remember that scene because that was, I think that was Matt and I moved or something like that, and we had, we were like, yeah, that's a smart idea. Go buy things you want.
Yeah, like I've been there. Like I ate cereal out of a dog bowl that I got at like some, I was at like a Chihuahua's game in El Paso, and they gave me a dog bowl. I was like, oh, this would be a great cereal bowl. So I've been there. But they actually become actual productive members of society and kind of really support each other, which I think is really, really beautiful. Leslie and Ben, obviously, right? Like, their relationship is great.
Yeah. But I will say to the Andy and April one, too, is, like, they purposely acknowledge the weirdness and age differences. And it could have been super weird, but they actually play out the weirdness in Andy and April, which I think is what makes it not weird.
Yeah, yes. I was going to say it, but I didn't know how weird it was going to sound. It sounded a lot better coming out of you, so I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, because there's a big age gap between them. And, yeah. Like, everybody on the show mentions how, like, what?
Yeah, because I don't remember how old Andy was, but I know April's, like, 19 in the show,
technically. Andy was, like, 26 or 27.
Something like that, yeah. So there's a pretty big age gap, yeah, relatively. Leslie and Ben, you know, they're basically the polar opposites when it comes to kind of running things. But they're basically, at the end, very supportive of each other. Like, at the point where Ben literally doesn't run for governor of Indiana because he knows that Leslie would do a better job, and he supports Leslie through that. I think that's a beautiful moment. There's, like, a laundry list of really great moments between Leslie and Ben, between, like, their fights and, like, making up and all that stuff. But that's, like, the one I can think of the most, where they were like, oh, no, you run. You run for governor. Oh, no, you run for governor. Like, what kind of relationship, like, that happens other than ones that are, like, super loving and supportive? You can't figure out which one of you should run for governor of Indiana.
I also just really like their fights, because they have a lot of really big fights, but and they're not like afraid to tell each other stuff. And yet at the end, they always come back together, which, like, I think for me, like, especially because Matt and I have completely different personalities. Like when I rewatched this after, like, Matt and I were together, I was like, oh, I love this. Because like, I am the person who's talking about all this weird shit. And Matt's just like, okay. Okay, but I'm going to buy you this Geek Fuel box because I know you love it, even though I don't care about this. But, like, I actually think my favorite, one of my favorite moments with them is, one, the proposal itself, but two, actually the UN episode.
Yeah.
Where they're fighting with each other and they're taking it out on the kids.
Yeah.
That's actually, like, one of my favorite episodes of them.
Yeah, and I think, like, what I've seen from just, like, talking to people, like, they really do identify with, like, the couple relationships in the show a whole bunch, whether it's Andy and April, Leslie and Ben, Chris Traeger and Anne. Like, there are, like, quality relationships here, and they fight, and they have, like, actual quality fights. Like, when I think of the fights that people had, and I don't want to, like, slight Friends or anything like that, but, like, some of the fights that they have in Friends are just dumb. Like, I don't feel like those are actual fights people have in real life. But I feel like, in Parks and Recreation, I feel like we get that kind of things.
Yeah, and it's about legitimate stuff too. Like, it's not about, like, stupid things.
It's like, hey, should we move across country to support my decision to be in this career? Kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, those are actual conversations that people have.
Yeah. No, and then I also think too, like, one of my favorite things, and this is just a personal thing, I just like it when Leslie talks about Ben's butt all the time, because I talk about Matt's butt all the time. So, yeah. Like, it's just, it just clicks there for me. So.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. In that same vein, like, I remember one of my favorite episodes, like, moments in the whole show is when April is wanting to move to Washington, D.C., even though Andy has this amazing career at Johnny Karate. And, like, instead of being like, oh, no, I have this amazing career at Johnny Karate, Andy's like, no, the best thing to happen to me in my life is you. Like, I'll do anything because you supported me through this thing. Like, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. It makes me want to cry just thinking about it.
It's really, you
know,
really
because
good.
I know that like that would that is what Stefani would say if I asked her like, hey, let's move across country because I got this really job I got this really great job offer, even though I know you have this really great career as XYZ.
Well, and didn't Stefani actually do that when you went back to El Paso?
That's when we went back to El Paso. That's what happened. And I said it in you were there. Stefani made a lot of money as a nail technician. She makes like almost more money than I do now. And I was like, hey, let's go back to El Paso because I can't get a job here without experience. And she's like, okay, let's do it. She gave up her position here for me, which is just beautiful. And that's why I love Andy and April's relationship, just like you love Leslie and Ben's. And I think
I also think the other thing, too, is for our third anniversary, Matt took me to go skydiving. And I was like, I bought you some socks. Like, the gift exchange shit between Ben and Leslie, like, hurts. Because I know I will never give a better gift than Matt does, because Matt essentially gives me a Game of Thrones chair every time he gives me a gift.
So to be fair, my socks are really expensive.
Yeah.
Look at him vouching for the socks. Look at him. That's quality.
They were very expensive compression socks.
Yeah, see, that's quality relationships building that we can relate to in Parks and Recreation. Yeah. Past the couples, I think there has really great relationships between like friends. So I think when you look at people like Ron and like everybody, but I think of Ron and April because they're pretty different when it comes to their characters, but Ron has just this amazing way of just being like the dad of the show and seeing what people can be great in and believing in them. And April just loves Ron so much and admires him for how he accepts her for what she is and what she can be, that they just have like really, really great character moments with themselves. I mean, you can say that for like Ron and Tom, where Ron, you know, supports his expansion of his business, where Ron basically gives Andy like the Ron Swanson scholarship. Like, there are really great moments between Ron and his goal that he's just even though he's kind of like this hard ass person, he gives of himself so much that creates really, really great character moments in the show. Tom and Donna, treat yourself is all I'm going to say, because what better than treat yourself? Because whenever I buy something nice for myself, all I think of is that gif of Tom and Donna going, treat yourself, where they just treat themselves to a day of just luxury.
What I think about is Ben buying himself the Batman suit.
We're going to get there. Don't worry. It's going to be in here. I also think of Chris and Ben, who are basically polar opposites when we see them in the show, but they just have such a long lasting support of each other, of each other's decisions. And it just really makes for, them bringing out like the worst or them bringing out the best of each other in the worst situations, even though they're completely opposite kind of people in situations. And I think that's what really makes season two kind of the jumping off point, because when they enter in, you're like, oh, these are really great dynamics that are really, really great.
So if we go to any relationship, obviously this is probably the weird one, but this is the one that I think about with Kate and I, because Kate likes to be happy about a lot of things and tells everybody, we can do this, we can do that. And then I'm like, no, we can't. We can't do any of this.
Unless you come in and drop the bomb.
And we can't do any of this. Everything she said was pretty much like great.
I think all of our writers would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
So I just let Kate talk, and I let Kate do everything, and everybody's like, we are such a happy thing, and I'm like, we're not going to do any of this.
Kate, why did you just sign us up for four things? We have something to do that day already. This
All of you guys are doing awesome. All this stuff is great. Matt, hey, this thing is coming up, and gleam. Like, that's pretty much the dynamic there. But it works, just like it works in Parks and Recreation. And then, of course, like, probably the biggest relationship is obviously Leslie and Anne. I think they're one of the best friendships on television, even if they emerged like by chance, by like Anne Perkins just going to a meeting and meeting Leslie Knope and then becoming really great friends. They support each other, but aren't afraid to call each other out. Like, they still have really, really big fights in the show. But they get over them like normal people probably should.
So this
and, is broken, sorry. Yeah, no, and they just remain friends. And even when like an entire country separates them, they still remain close in even their biggest moments in their personal lives.
Yeah, so this is probably one of the relationships that I am sad that kind of gets, because obviously I think whatever Ann Perkins ends up having to do another show. I think she gets her own show, so she ends up becoming
She's not even in season 7 that's what I'm except saying. For like a couple moments.
This is actually one of the relationships that's great at the beginning, and then sadly, because of what ends up happening in their actual lives, that we lose a lot of that. I mean, when they're on screen, it's great together, but it's like, oh, you know, there's 14, 13 episodes, but we get it Anne's in like 3 of them now.
Yeah, I still think it works though, because like when even like spoiler alert, like when Anne is pregnant, like she doesn't call Leslie because she knows Leslie would drop everything to fly across country to go be with her during her like birth and things like that. So I think they do a good enough job to kind of still have those moments, even though obviously like real life logistical things prevent the showrunners from having those moments happen on screen. And then just like finally, when you talk about relationships, I think just like relationships between different people. Basically, like, Leslie and everybody. Like, is there anyone in the main cast that Leslie doesn't support through literally everything despite her busy schedule on the show? Like, she's literally there for everybody, gives the best gifts, is supportive of Larry, Gary, Jerry, Gergich sometimes. Like, is just outwardly supportive and just kind of, like, the pinnacle of how you should be as a friend despite all the things you have going on in your own life.
And I also think, too, like, one of the things that she is, she's also a really hard worker. Like, Leslie works through everything. Like, she doesn't let anything stop her. Like, she takes on 10, 20 projects, but she'll get them done because she knows they're not going to get done without her. And so I really, really like that. And what I like about, because I don't like, I mean, if you've listened to this podcast, you probably know this, I don't like overly optimistic characters. I don't. But with her, like, I like her a whole bunch and a lot, because she's someone who obviously burns out but doesn't let it stop her from doing things, and like it, she doesn't let it kill like her excitement for doing things, and that's something that's really hard.
Yeah I couldn't say it any better myself. Past kind of like the duo relationships or like one-to-one kind of things, like I never feel like the people on the show generally don't care about each other. Like, there's a lot of genuine connections, and honestly, like, they're pretty good people. Like, I can't think of anyone who's like actually a bad person other than Mark and maybe Tom in some situations, but like, they're generally kind of good people. And I don't know if I can say that 100% about shows like Friends or The Office or even How I Met Your Mother. Like, there's people in that show where I'm like, oh, that person sucks. Like, that person isn't a good person. And I think Parks and Recreation shows is kind of, like you said at the beginning, like a happier version of The Office with actual good people. I think we can see that in different like ensemble moments. So things like when Ben shares his bachelorette party with all the other guys, Tom inviting to treat yourself, or Tom and Donna inviting Ben to treat yourself when he shows up in a Batman costume and he's embarrassed by it, and they're just like, nah, come on, man, treat yourself. It's such a good scene. It's really, really great. Even though Tom might be probably, like, quote-unquote, maybe, like, the worst, like, morally character on the show, maybe, and that's not even, like, a big indictment. Everybody going to the strip club to make Tom feel better. The guys giving Chris Traeger the buddy box at the end of the Bachelor episode. Everybody helping Ben and Leslie raise, like, the triplets. The gingerbread house where they all kind of come together and make the gingerbread house for Leslie to kind of pay her back for all of her really great gifts. Like, these are all moments that come to mind of just like genuine people and genuine good moments that I feel like would actually happen in real life. And that's kind of what I have for relationships.
Yeah. Like, I would say like the chemistry of people on this show is just outstanding. Like, there's not a single moment where it feels forced or not genuine. And I think that that's really hard to do. And that's really hard to do in comedy. And I think it just gets better as the show goes on.
Yeah. Matt, have anything to add before we move on to representation?
No, but I do want to say, before we go on representation, can we talk about the actual, like, government work that they do and how the actual issues they bring up are, like, are actually extreme but very, very plausible, and like you can totally see half this stuff happening.
Yeah, Kate, do you want to talk about, or Matt, do you want to talk about it? Go for it.
Oh no, I was just saying, because like we are, because this whole thing's about them being actually in the government. They try to run, you know, whatever. Leslie tries to do like a parks. You see people blocked. Like, we have like, you know, people fight going, I want my 83-ounce small soda. And you're like, why do and you're like, why is this a thing? And people are like, you see the company fight against this. We have like with the sugar, the health code at the seas. They have all the stuff with like, I guess they show a lot of like, you see it and you laugh at a lot of stuff, but it actually relates to like local politics of what happens, of like how bad a lot of the stuff can be, and like people just don't know. Like Leslie, they literally were like, I want my 80-ounce small soda, and they're like, but you're all gonna die of diabetes in a year from drinking this. And then we have
yeah, what comes to mind for me is like the political like battling between the Parks Department and like the libraries.
Yes.
Like those that's the thing that actually happened too, of like people fighting against the same interests and things like that. So that that's what comes to mind. But also like the 80-ounce sodas is
but town hilarious. Hall is something that I yes. Like the town halls are something that I really, really love. Because Leslie's just like, but guys, we gotta do this. And you just have people just like saying random things. And I think the funniest thing is when she's trying to get Anne and her are trying to get sex ed into the old folks' homes. And then you have yes. Billy Eichner, or no, not Billy Eichner, Billy Eichner, somebody else. But you have the Christian couple, or like the super religious couple that like constantly comes in and messes things up, or like her, the gay penguins.
Yeah, the Gay Penguins episode is great.
The fact that, like, what I really like so far is, like, the local government stuff, or even just, like, it always shows that somebody is always going to complain about this stuff. Always. No matter what. And it kind of seems like a hyperbole, like Matt said, but, like, some of this I could really see happening. Like, I'm yeah. pretty sure that if the zoo had a same-sex wedding for penguins, you would definitely have some like moms against love type things that yeah. would start getting mad.
Yeah. If you want to see this, like, and you can't go to your local city council meetings, just go to your local HOA meeting. And this is the kind of stuff that happens in real
life. Fair. But no, I know. Cause obviously we might want to touch on it since it is a political show. Like, technically the whole show is about politics and them running government, that I figure we should say, like, you see a lot of genuine, like, bad decisions or like terrible decisions, or like Kate said, like just random people who ruin it no matter how many people agree with stuff.
Or what? Like Jeremy Jam, and the fact that his entire thing is that he just takes money from people to vote certain ways.
Yes.
And you have like this super old sexist and racist like guys in office that will never go, and Leslie's just like, but why? Why are they here?
Yeah. That's why I'm like really scared if this show was made today, like how this would run, because it's actually scary to think about. How would Leslie Knope survive in this political climate? Oh god.
But no, I think they did a really great job of that, of like showing and putting in a lot of that, of like this type of stuff actually does happen quite often. Why government, as Ron says, does nothing.
Yeah, until you get to be the superintendent of a national park and you can just stroke the river in your canoe.
You don't have to do anything.
And live your life. You have to do anything. That's the life. Ron Swanson lives life in this show. He's probably like best quality of life in the show for sure. When he gets cornrows, ugh.
No, the best part is when he gives a child a landmine that is, or not a mortar,
the claymore.
Yeah.
No, I think one of my favorite Ron moments is when he's turning in the chair.
Yeah, yeah.
When the person's trying to talk to him, and he just keeps turning in the circular desk, and then when April plans all of the meetings for March 31st, thinking that March 31st isn't a thing.
But that's like real stuff, because I've had to deal with like local and state officials and do a bunch of like with actual parks and everything. That was my job. I had to go talk to them. I had to get paperwork. And they don't like to do anything. They don't want to do anything. They don't care to do anything. Like, I literally called because I had to get a permit to collect plants in Mississippi, and I did it like, I don't know, let's say in like April, and I was going like in July or something like that, and it's like, you know, 2-3 months away, and I call him and I'm like, hey, it's been like a month and a half, what's going on? He goes, haven't heard anything, that's the way bureaucracy works, and then hung the phone up on me. And I was like,
did you talk to Ron Swanson?
Oh, there's plenty of people I talk to Ron Swanson. The guy in Colorado, I mean, they are mean people. You have to be mean to them to get anything done. Like what Leslie does in this show is probably a great representation of like what actually has to be done in actual like small government to get actual anything done.
Like, she just takes, she doesn't take no for an answer.
Yes.
She just keeps going.
You have
going
to keep calling people, and you have to call them again. I mean, people never respond to emails. They tell you to email all the time. That's why I don't email people anything. Because I know email gives you choice not to answer. I guess it's like...
Are you saying that Leslie Nope plays her Nope card a bunch?
Yes.
That was such a bad joke.
It was.
Hey, that's a quality joke, okay? They reference exploding kittens in that Love and Robot show, so I feel like it's very valid to make it here, okay?
I'm just going to go with
a joke about exploding kittens, okay?
I'm just going to go with a nope on that one.
Pope a nope?
Yep.
Okay, so, all right, we're running a little bit long, and I figured this would, just because there's a lot of really great things to talk about, so I'm kind of all final about why, though. I kind of want to talk about representation. Like, while I don't think it's like... I don't know. I don't feel like it's like the forefront of the show. I think they just like let the people be people in the show, and the representation kind of comes after it. But there is a lot of it there. So when you think about like the cast, when we ran through the main cast list or like the guest star list, there's a lot of diversity in the cast, not only just like ethnicity wise, but size, body type, orientation, and things like that. It's pretty much all there for the most part in the show. But I think the biggest part representation, because this does feature Leslie Nope as a female bureaucrat politician trying to get things done, I think feminism is a big part of it. You have a lot of women in the show. They all come in a variety of sizes, ethnicities, and just like careers and being comfortable in the careers, whether it's being Ann Perkins wanting to go be a mom, Leslie Nope wanting to go to be a politician, Donna being just like person who has her life together all the time kind of thing. Like, there's lots of representation there, and they're all pretty different. And I would have to imagine that this show pretty much crushes the Bechdel test, if I'm not mistaken. Like, they let the women just be women on the show. And then you have things like Galentine's Day and such like that, and things like that. And I'm going to stop talking because I don't want to get added on Twitter. And since Kate is the only woman, I'm going to let her talk here about feminism yeah. representation.
So, like, it's one of those things, too, where... The show has like this really, really great transition where it actually, and I think a lot of it comes from that shift that you had like in production and stuff. You can tell that like Amy Poehler gets more control over her character, and there's a lot of like, how do I explain it? Leslie has to deal with stuff that it seems really absurd, like the old congressman, like, sexually harassing her and stuff, and it's funny to watch, but yet she has to deal with it and deals with it in like in good ways, and people get theirs. But like, for me, it's the fact, like, when I think about the show doing feminism or doing any sort of empowerment, it's not the fact that Leslie is a woman who gets stuff done, it's the fact that there are women on the show who are not like each other. Like, it's not, like, not everybody has to be a happy-go-lucky woman who loves everything and uses love to get things done. Like, people can just be themselves and be, which is important, because you don't get that a lot. A lot of the times you get a character like Leslie who is like, yes, feminism, like, all the time, because Leslie talks about that all the time. But then you have other characters like April or even Anne, like, who just exist and deal with things differently. And I think that having, when you do diversity well, like I think the show does, is you just let characters be. You don't harp and try to put them into boxes or try to make them fulfill something that you have in your head. And I think that like one of the great things that they do with Leslie is they really exaggerate a lot of her stuff, which can sometimes backfire when it comes to like talking about feminism. But when you actually have her in situations and you let it tease out, like, you can see that, like, oh, she isn't just like thinking about it this one way. And I think one of my favorite episodes too is where Ron wins the Woman of the Year award in government and Leslie doesn't, and it's just it's really funny, but it's also like really good. And then you have the episode where Anne and her try to move the like industrial oven or something.
Oh man,
that is great.
And they're like, you can't move that, and she's like, we can do anything. And then they just like slowly realize, oh crap, we can't move this. But then Leslie's like, but wait, we have we have connections. And so she calls people to get it to move. And she, like, she wins, but she wins through thinking through it. Like, it's just really good. It's really good. Like, you have guys, and it's not even just about representation of, like, just women. But, like, when you talk about feminism in a show, it really is just about treating characters equally and letting them be themselves. And it's like, there isn't a character on here who's just one type. Like, the men on the show get to be a whole range of things, and the women on the show get to be a whole range of things.
Hey, are you telling me how men are represented on a show?
I am.
Hey, you can't do that. Now, I mean, it wasn't something that I wanted to include, just because, like, when I'm, like, researching the show, it's really, like, actual papers and all this stuff done about, like, how Leslie Knope is, like, the right representation of feminism, which is why, like, I really wanted you to talk about it, of course, but, like, from the male perspective, like, all the dudes on this show are completely different. Like, they make jokes at, you know, Tom's expense of being kind of, like, a small dude compared to, like, Nick Offerman, who plays a, you know, woodworking, you know, manly man kind of thing. So you get, like, all of the things. But when I think of the show, I don't think of, like, oh, hey, this is a show that gives great representation. But for a lot of the reasons you said, like, they just let the characters be the characters. And it's not like, oh, that's that character, or like, that's that character archetype. They just, like, let the people be who they want to be and let them develop, like, naturally and organically, which really presents for a really great show, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think, like, I don't know. I also just, I could probably say a lot more, but, like, it has to take more thought, and when I watch the show, I don't really think about it, which is interesting.
Yeah, I don't either. Because
it does it so well that you don't feel like you need to kind of pick it apart or do any of those things. I mean, I think the only thing that rewatching it most recently, like, maybe 2 years ago, was there's some weird things that Leslie says that talk about Anne being multiracial, and I'm like, this is weird, and I don't like hearing that.
Oh, she's like, you multiracial angel or something. Yes, like that.
And yeah, I'm like, this is really weird. That's, like, the only thing I think, but, like, everything else is just, you have characters being really good, and I think the best part of what Leslie does is she just tries to uplift other people.
Yeah.
Consistently, whether she's doing, and she's not just about talking, right? Like, the reason I think she's such a good representation of feminism is that she is doing something. It is always about impact. It's always about, what can I do to actually help the community around me? What can I do to actually uplift somebody else's voice? And I think that's really good. I also think that there are a lot of the times where the show balances it by showing how Leslie is too much centered on, like, the feminism of something, or too centered on, like, the appropriate way to do something. And then she ends up getting, like, shown that it's not that simple in some of the episodes, which I also think is really good. It happens with her and Anne a lot. And I think that keeps a grounding in her. But yeah, I mean, I really don't know what to say. Like, it's weird. Like, because I knew you were going to ask and you were going to talk about it. I do know the Galentine's Day is actually something that is legitimately celebrated in, I know Alamo Drafthouse does special Galentine's Day events, when February 13 rolls around, like, everybody's talking about it on Twitter, friends actually do stuff, like, it's something that has kind of, like, stuck as a cultural touchstone to, like, celebrate the women in your life, which is kind of cool that, like, a show kind of brought that, But yeah, no, I mean, I just really like her. She's the only positive character. And when I say positive, like, happy-go-lucky, I-never-get-depressed characters that I've ever seen on TV that I actually care about. Because that doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah. Matt, you have anything to add?
When it's done well, you don't know what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect. Man, Matt, you just summarized everything we just said in, like, one sentence. Yeah, like, I mean, I think our listeners kind of know, like, where we're at this point, you know, at episode 96, but, like, representation is usually a big part of, like, what we talk about, but in this show, it just happens so organically, and they just let characters be, that I don't think we need to spend the bulk of the time on why this show is great, because it's not something I think about consistently when I think about this show. I mean, and there's obviously, like, a whole lot of things we can talk about. We're at almost an hour and a half at this point, so if there are things that we don't talk about when we get into our fan but why those are our fun facts, feel free to, like, let us know and, like, add us and tell us, like, some of the best moments that you can think about that we didn't get to talk about. Or if there are issues in representation, we would love to hear about it so we can kind of talk through those things, you know, virtually so we can know. Maybe we missed something, or maybe I missed something when I was doing my notes, but I would love to hear about it. So that's really all I have for our kind of bulk of the episode. I'd love to get through some fan but why those. I threw some of the some of our fun facts. I kind of threw some fun facts in through the things, but these are some fun facts that I didn't really fit into the actual notes. So I'll just start with first, they considered a series based on local government trying to rebuild after they tried to like base the show after a character who was trying to rebuild themselves after a political career following a political scandal.
Didn't they make that show and it failed?
No, they didn't make that show, but whose backstory is that?
No, but I believe they actually made that a show like that ended up failing, I thought.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I know that's big. They basically took what the show might have been kind of based off of and made that basically Ben Wyatt's backstory with his whole thing of like becoming like a teen.
Ice Town!
Yeah, Ice Town. So they used that and kind of threw it in later. So even though they didn't use it when the first show kicked off, when they're trying to figure out how to kind of cross over The Office or kind of how they got the show started, they still used it anyway. One of the things that I found was really interesting that one of the titles for the show was actually called, it was actually called Public Service, was the name of the show for a very, very long time. But they decided to change it last minute because they didn't want to like, the showrunners didn't want to quote unquote like make fun of public service. So they changed the name of the show like a month before its premiere on a Super Bowl commercial. They changed the name of the show like very close to like its biggest, you know, announcement.
So the funny thing you say that is because you say Parks and Recreation, which is also weird because like I actually forgot that that's the actual full name of the show because I've always heard it as Parks and Rec.
Yeah, or PNR or whatever the case is. But I think it works better as Parks and Rec than like Public Service, personally. But it also might be just like hindsight, maybe. So Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman shot a makeout scene for the gag reel of every season. So every season, like, they made out, basically. But it was never included in the gag reel because they thought it was, like, too gross and just didn't work. I just thought that was a funny one. And just
I love that picturing
it,
so much.
Picturing it in my head just doesn't work at all. But I would love to see it. And then we mentioned one of my other ones that I wanted to add in there, like the time jump from season 6 to season 7 happened because, again, Amy Poehler didn't want to work with infants because she just raised her own. She's like, nah, I don't want to do that. And then my last one, there's a whole bunch. Like, you can go find articles about all of, like, the really cool fun facts. But one of my favorite ones is that, like, a lot of the times, I don't think Nick Offerman is really acting because he actually, one, is an actual skilled saxophone player. And the writers didn't know that when they wrote the story about his alter ego, Duke Silver. So he's like actually plays a saxophone. And then two, Nick Offerman actually owns a workshop where several scenes were actually filmed and he had to hire a manager to keep it afloat when he was cast in Parks and Recreation to keep it going while he was actually doing the show. So the biggest parts of his character are like being just like a manly man woodworker, which he actually does. And his alter ego saxophone player, which he actually does. So did Nick Offerman really even do anything but show up to set?
He act?
He just kind of just did his own thing, which I think is really, really great. And then to wrap us up, we'll get into some of our fan but why those, of which we had quite a few, to be honest, after I kind of butchered the tweet, but it's okay because our fans are very accommodating. So we'll start with just straight off the bat, at Lizzie Lynn Garcia, who you've heard on the show multiple times. She's also our social media manager and editor, one of our editors for the website. Parks and Rec is my favorite show of all time. I rewatch it probably once a month. It has gotten me through many difficult moments, and seeing someone as positive and strong as Leslie means a lot. That is really great. You must really, really, like, you have to, like, really, really love a show to watch it, like, once a month, I think. At Captain_Neymar, I don't have a favorite episode because I love all of them, but I do have a favorite character, and it is Jean Ralphio. And he posted a GIF. I like your energy, hombre. What do you say you and I ride go-karts later? Which, like, I think is like a John Ralphio, other than like he's the worst. It's like a very John Ralphio thing to say. At Fernandez_photo, favorite character hands down Ron Mother Effin Swanson. He didn't say Mother Effin, but you know. Favorite episode when Leslie plans Ron's excursion in Scotland. and a nice little gif. Yas making fun of me for posting two tweets. At Jose Gayaso, as a government worker myself, Leslie Knope tireless enthusiasm for improving people's lives through her department was an inspiration. I know some of my good colleagues feel the same. Also, Jean Ralphio and Mona Lisa, so good. At Susan Cat, it matters to me because it shows people working together to solve problems, sometimes in their own lives and sometimes for the good of the community. It is uncynical. Favorite character, Ben, or more accurately, Ben and Leslie as a pair. Favorite episode, The Fight. Ben and Leslie's big fight, which is, I think Kate referenced it earlier, so it works out really, really great. At Drassy Domino, it represented the idea that a fantastic comedy could come from an upbeat tone. You don't have to be sarcastic and crappy to be funny. At Captain Nipster, it got me through a breakup, and I'll forever adore it for showing a more grounded take on how to actively work within government when it's not shit to make lives better.
It's shit most of the time.
Yeah. This is also true, yeah. At Glory Days Girl, the Cones of Dunshire was a great episode, and it's just a gif of Ben saying, it's all about the cones.
That is one of the best. I love that episode so much.
Dude, I love that whole episode because, like, they, like, patent his thing even after he leaves him. It's such, like, a quality, wholesome moment with, like, him and his relationship with those accountants.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, honestly, one of the best relationships in the series is Ben going to go work for the accountants and then leaving them and them getting sad, but getting very excited when he comes back again.
Yeah, it's so good. Multiple times. Because he does it multiple times. It's great. At Avid Modi. Modi? Mondi? I don't know. Yes. Telethon episode always gets me good. Best character goes to Donna, Andy, or Ron. Not sure how to pick. And she posts a gif of Donna saying, treat yourself. At Dr. Ragnarok, because of Parks and Rec, I got into different comedies on TV. Without, I would never have watched Arrested Development. And my favorite character is, without a doubt, Andy. At Tales featuring fandom, Ron Swanson is my favorite. My favorite gif is below, and it's I'm really proud of you gif when he tells Leslie. And it's very great. Fun fact, Kate tweeted that to me earlier this week, and it meant a lot.
I did, and I use it a lot.
It's very wholesome. And then finally, at Spooks Show Cinema, all he says is, oh, Jerry. And it's the still of him saying Jerry for the skin with Jerry Gergich. That man has the largest penis I have ever seen. Special shout out because he posted this twice because I messed up the tweet. So thank you.
Yeah.
Spook Show Cinema. I really appreciate you. Oh, and then finally, I almost forgot. Swara, I know that he isn't, I can't say any of his handles, but he did give us one on our Discord, which you should all be a part of because our Discord is great. Parks and Rec matters to me because I've been a long time lover of politics and policy. And this wonderful and uplifting show has taught me the importance of perseverance in making government work for people, even when things seem dire and without hope. Leslie Knope is an idol of mine, as she's taught me how to be relentlessly hopeful. If you don't know Swara, that is brand Swara in a tweet.
Swara is Leslie. Like, let's just be clear.
For
when
sure.
I need cheering up, I go to Swara.
Yeah.
Like, you be the person Swara believes you to be. Be the person Leslie Knope believes you to be.
Yeah, and that's all we got for Fanboy Why Those. So I guess we can move into final thoughts real quick, and then we can get our listeners out of here.
Yeah, but I'll start. So I think ultimately this is a show, like, I actually want to go back and rewatch it now again after kind of talking about it for a while, because there's, like, so much we didn't talk about. Like, we could just do an episode just talking about our favorite moments of the show. Like, Snake Juice? Come on. That is hilarious. And everybody just being extremely hungover the next day? Like, it's great. They're, like, I just love it. Like, I really have nothing other to say than that I love this show. And I think that the genre of workplace comedy is something that I don't know if we're going to get again or if we should get again, because I think that, like, between 30 Rock, The Office, and this, I mean, as soon as we have Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but Brooklyn Nine-Nine is kind of different, right? Like, it's not necessarily, like, the same in the whole, like, confessional aspect of it and everything like that. But, like, I just really, really enjoy it. And I'm, like, I love Ben. And I feel like I'm Ben. Well, Ben with the nerdy stuff, but Matt being the person to deliver terrible information, that's the role he plays.
What about you, Matt?
It's actually a really good show. I don't know, like Kate said, that we're actually going to get any more of this orc humor shows anymore. I think, like, people keep trying to, like, go back and look at a lot of them. They have a lot of problems now, and so they're like, oh, blah, blah. But I just think for what it was in the time, it worked great. The characters are, like, it's one of the few shows, like you said, that all the characters I really enjoy. There's very few, like, moments that I don't really like of these characters. And I guess having to deal with government officials and, like, actual parks and recreation or parks department all the time, it's very well done, even if it's extreme as, like, or hyperbole as it is, can get sometimes. I do think everybody should at least watch it once. Skip, like we said, to season 3 or 2.5, and you should be good. I don't like the ending. I like the ending, but it is, I don't know, it's one of those torn endings because they do just walk away by, you could be president, or you could be president, or they just announce it, like, blank running for president, and yeah, we don't know who. But I think with the way the show does it and everything, I think it does end well, especially when you consider all of Ben and Leslie's relationship.
I also do want to point out that Matt isn't Ben. Matt is actually Nick Offerman's character, Ron Swanson, in that he pretends, he calls you by your name so that you think he doesn't care, but he calls you by the wrong name to make you think that he doesn't care, but he really does.
Yeah, was he call his friends like workplace associates or something, yes, like that?
My best friend I ever had, I never spoke to. It was great.
No, if you're listening right now, you should cast us, pick a person to have us identify with on Parks and Rec and tweet at us and let us know at the Wither PC.
Wait, I mean, you both got people. Who do you think I am? Wait, what is this? Am I getting left out?
I thought you were just Andy.
Yep, I was going to say Andy.
All right, I'll take Andy. All right. I don't live in a hole, though. I'm not creeping with my girlfriends. You don't live in a hole.
I'm telling you, the first season is just bad on all characters.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah.
Like, Andy's like half-stalker. I'll take it. Leslie's a stalker.
Well, I actually think in the first season, Andy isn't really funny. He's just a bum.
Yeah, no, and he's terrible. He's
just a bad boyfriend.
Yeah, and he's terrible, and he's, like, very unlikable.
I've been rewatching the episodes at night when he plays Mark in pool, and he was like, "All right, say your goodbyes," after he beats him. It's just dumb. It's just dumb. Better.
But yeah, no, I would say that you're Andy because you're just happy, and you show up when you need to show up, and you don't let us be sad, and you're the positive person.
Hey, that means a lot. That makes my week, because I've had a really rough week, so that means a lot. I mean, and for my final thoughts is kind of like the episode, because I kind of ran it. Like, there's like a lot of stuff we didn't talk about, and I understand that, but we only have, you know, so much time to talk about things. But, like, this is generally one of my favorite shows that when me and Stefani watched it, like, we just, once we got into it, we just binge-watched it. Like, we couldn't stop watching, and it's still one of the shows that we'll watch every now and again, just to, like, watch our favorite episodes, because it's just that good. From its relationships to its actual real-life applications of how friendship works, to its character development, to its not-on-the-nose comedy or representation. It's just all around a really good show. And I've been on the record multiple times that, like, when people say, oh, I don't like Parks and Rec because it's like The Office. I'm like, well, watch Parks and Rec and then tell me if it's like The Office in terms of kind of like its way it portrays its characters. Because it's just, it's different enough that I think it works really, really well. And I would suggest this show to literally anybody who likes comedy in general.
Leslie Knope's actually a good boss.
Yeah,
Michael Scott
is a really good boss.
Michael Scott is funny and great, and we love everything about him. But he would be a terrible person to work for.
Yeah, well, because like, that's the thing, and that's what I said earlier. Like Parks and Rec is a positive The Office, because The Office gets its humor because you identify with all the shit that people are going through. Like, you identify with that crappy office lifestyle, and that's why it works. And then Parks and Rec, you have it for, like, the humor works for different reasons. Like, they're very different shows. I think they're similar in that they're workplace comedies and developed by the same person, and there are definitely things that show that they're extremely similar, but I think the core of what the show is about, those are different.
Yeah, so if you gotten through our entire episode and you still think that, like, The Office and, like, the Parks and Rec are different, and that's why you haven't watched Parks and Recreation, go watch it. It's still on Netflix for whatever time that is it exists there because you know how it goes.
Until
but
they have go to play friends again.
Yeah, exactly. But it's good. You should go watch it. I enjoyed our conversation about it, and I'm sure we left stuff out. So I would love to have conversations on Twitter, on our Discord about it, because it's just such a good show that I really, really, really like. And it's 10 years old, and we're still talking about it. So it matters. But why, though?
So before we head out, make sure that you send us in your questions, whatever questions. Doesn't have to be related to the podcast. If you have a question that you've always wanted to ask me, Adrian, or Matt, send us them. But why, though, podcast at gmail.com, or send it to us on Twitter at butwhythoughpc. And while you're at it, follow us on there as well as on Facebook and Instagram by the same name. And if you want to support us a little bit more than you already do, because you support us a lot by listening, head on over to patreon.com/butwhythoughpc, and there you get access to our episodes. You get access to episodes early, exclusive episodes, and for the top tier, you can even choose us to record an episode just for you. And thank you so much to our new patrons, Jose, Grant, and Rebecca. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And remember that you can get exclusive content at those $3.
Thank you
for the support. Patrons. It's great.
Yeah, thank you for the support. I know we've plugged the Discord a bunch, but like really get involved in our Discord. Not only to our patrons, but to our followers as well. Like a lot of stuff happens in our Patreon, or in our Discord, because Matt's really done a lot of really great work to make our Discord great. So join it. And joining the conversation. And our Patreons get an exclusive channel where they get to know all the things that are happening behind the scenes.
But yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @omo3andrew. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @superreese93. SUPERRUIZ93. I'm pretty close to 500 followers, y'all. Yeah, nice. I'm getting there.
Yeah, I just got over 700.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
I have
Thanks, Ben.
3,282.
All right, well, I'm going to go back in my hole in my backyard. See you later.
Go get that job interview.
Matt?
Just kind of float down the river.
Don't use Ron.
Send it.
You know it.